Good morning. The next exercise that we consider is the exam held on July 16, 2015. This text shows one of the most diffused systems for the alimentary sterilization that foresees the foods pass across two electrodes applied supplied with the alternate current. This current causes a heating of the food compound that usually is a better conductor if rich of salt. And the temperature necessary for destroying or at least inactivating mold and bacteria is around 90-95. Therefore, the idea is that two electrodes develop a circuit that is supplied as shown in the figure, and these electrodes are in contact with a food that is a good conductor. Therefore, we create a circuit into which the current passes and clearly passes also into the food. We know that the current crossing a resistor causes a transformation of the electric energy into thermal energy, and this happens also in this case, allowed that the food is a good conductor. The literature shows that the distance between the electrode is an important parameter for this, because if the distance is short, the heat that will characterize the food will be greater. Therefore, it is necessary to conceive a mechanism that manages the distance between the two electrodes, and this is obtained through a direct current motor together with a screw that moves the two electrodes so as to regulating their distance, that is to make them closer or not, and therefore deciding the temperature at which the food must be set to perform a good sterilization, but also to avoid that the food itself is burned. In the picture shown in the text, you see clearly the electrodes, an insulator tube into which the food is inserted, two insulator caps just to keep the electrodes separated by the food itself, and you see also a mechanism that is connected to the two electrodes through a screw that is in turn connected to the shaft of a direct current motor, and clearly if we rotate the motor in one sense or into the opposite sense, we have the possibility to determine the distance between the electrodes. What are the questions and the requirements of the problem? The first group is the same as usual. Draw the block scheme of the acquisition regulation chain, identifying the input and output variables in every block, and in particular the process variable. Calculate the transfer function of the process, highlighting what variables must be known. Plot the Bode diagram of the loop function process plus actuator, discussing the eventual problems in terms of stability and instability. We wrote process plus actuator because, I repeat again once more, we consider the transducer and its electronic network not influencing the overall gain of the acquisition regulation chain. Describe what kind of regulators can be introduced to eliminate the sources of instability and their numerical implementations. Design the power supply system to regulate the current for the electrodes. And finally, the group of the questions: what is the transfer function of a piezoelectric accelerometer and how to keep it stable? Why the input impedance of a circuit is high and the output one must be low? What is the sensibility of a typical strain gauge and how to augment it? The coupling diodes describe the usage in a contact matrix. In this case, I have joined the solution to the same file into which we have the text. So the next page shows some ideas on which it could be based. First of all, let's consider the process variable. The text helps us to define it because the aim of the process is to obtain a good degree of sterilization, but clearly the inactivation of the molds and of the bacteria depends on the temperature that must be reached. The text said 90-95 degrees. Therefore, we can fix as a process variable the temperature, assuming that the microprocessor will have a relationship. We have a lookup table that establishes the degree of sterilization with respect to the reached temperature. Otherwise, it would be also difficult to measure with an automatic control system the degree of molds and bacteria present in the food. Instead, we well know that it is easy for us to measure the temperature of a compound. The power supply. We have a motor, but again, we can ask to ourselves if we can neglect weights, frictions, inertia, or in other words, if terms of this kind are present in the process that we are considering. And the answer is yes, we can neglect, and no features of this type can be considered in the model of the process. Therefore, we have a motor that provides angular velocity. No need for torque is present in this text, in this problem, and the power supply can be serenely considered voltage. On the other hand, the manipulated variable is in this case short list, but even in this case a list, featuring the presence of the angular velocity. Clearly, we have a motor, and as the text says, the distance between the electrodes that influences, that affect the temperature, the final temperature of the compound. The distance D is obtained through the suitable, through the controlled rotation of the shaft of the motor together with the screw, so as to transform the rotation into a linear movement. And what is important is in this case the amount of the rotation, that is not the value of omega. not the value of the angular rotation velocity, but the angle of the rotation. In other words, we could observe that in this case, probably, a stepper motor would be better. We can ask finally, at the end, I mean, of the exercise, what changes if a stepper motor is put in this problem, replacing the direct current motor. But now, let's consider the real situation that the text presents to us. Therefore, we are interested to determine the generic angular displacement theta, and we know that this angle is obtained through the integral function of the angular rotation velocity omega. On the other hand, we know that the relationship between the angular velocity and the voltage supplied to the motor is the classic low-pass filter expression that we have many times seen till now, that is K on 1 plus S tau. So, if we, as usual, try to express the gain of the regulation loop, we have to identify the relationship, the ratio between process variable and control variable, that again we have to split into process variable divided manipulated variable, time manipulated variable divided by control variable. And in our case, this means that we have to find the relationship between the temperature and the distance, then the relationship between the distance and the angular rotation velocity, and finally the relationship already found between the angular velocity and the power supply. Let's remember that the relationship between the distance and the angular velocity is 1 divided by S, that is an integral function, because we clearly suppose that the distance is proportional to the angular rotation of the motor plus the screw system, and therefore we have transfer of the integral relationship between the angle and the angular velocity towards the relationship between the distance and the angular rotation velocity itself. And this is the first pole. The second pole is related to the text, to the expression that says to us that the distance between the two electrodes determine the temperature of the food. Here we can model the process in two times. If we suppose that the distance and the temperature are simply proportional, that is, distance determines a direct relationship between how hot, let's say, how warm is the compound, the food, related to the distance between the electrodes. And in this case, we don't have any component in frequency in the transfer function. Another idea, another approach, is to consider that the distance will affect the variation of the temperature, will affect the velocity with which the temperature changes. In this case, the right equation that we can write is L minus D is proportional to the derivative function of the temperature. In other words, if d is the distance between the electrodes, the greater the distance, the lower will be the velocity of the temperature variation. The smaller the distance d, the higher will be the derivative function. L, in this case, is the maximum distance that the two electrodes can have. Of course, it is a constant value. And this expression introduces into the model of the process another pole in the origin, since in the Laplace domain this equation becomes t equal to L minus d divided by s. Consider that we have the possibility to simplify such a kind of equation, that is, the constant L divided by s can be clearly eliminated by a feedforward block. The function that the feedforward must compensate will be not only L divided by s, but we have to consider all the other components in frequency. The, let's say, interesting thing is that L can be considered as a disturbance, and however, it is constant, so the compensation doesn't need a further transducer to be introduced in the control chain, therefore is only a numerical feedforward block, and in such a way we can say that the final temperature in terms of transfer function, in terms of response in frequency of the regulated process, is minus d divided by s. In other words, the equation says to us that the disturbance is additive and therefore can be easily eliminated by subtraction of a correspondent term through the feedforward block. Therefore, the general transfer function becomes G equal to PV divided by VC, or in other words, the ratio between the temperature and the power supply voltage, and is equal to minus K divided by S squared time 1 plus S tau. The negative sign is not considered, is not important, because we consider the absolute value of the gain. And clearly, the equation shows that the system is not stable, but we have the possibility to compensate the free poles with a couple of functions, zero pole, that will allow to cross the 0 dB axis with a slope equal to minus 1. Therefore, the regulation of such a problem is quite straightforward, and even the numerical implementation is easy, because we have already seen how to realize, how to carry out such a kind of functions. Two zero pole functions can be considered as a cascade of two blocks, each one featuring a zero pole transfer function, and we have already seen several times how to do this. The question number five concerns the circuit providing a suitable power supply, and in particular a suitable current for the food and the two electrodes. In many, let's say, answers of the students, I have seen that they try to conceive complex circuits like with silicon controlled rectifiers, triac, and so on. But in this case, the point was very simple. Consider that the SCR and the triac typically are, suitable for those situations into which we are particularly interested to the average value of the power supply that we provide to the load that we are considering. So if we want to use the SCR and the triac, we have first of all to ask to ourselves if this is the case. In the process, in the situation that is under analysis, let's say the scenario is partially clear. That is, the nature of the load is resistive. We based the process on the fact that a current crosses a conductive material, and the product of the resistor times the current squared, that is the electric power, will be transformed into a thermal power, and therefore we will have the possibility of controlling the temperature of the process of the compound in this case. The question is this phenomenon sensible to the average of the input signal provided, or can be considered sensible to the average of the input signal? If the answer is yes, we can consider the solution at the slide number 14 of the actuators block, into which we clearly demonstrated that an emulator of a silicon-controlled rectifier is a possible solution, providing a signal that is replicating the behavior of the average voltage provided, given to a load through a silicon-controlled rectifier. Clearly, the example talks about the average voltage, but you will agree with me that average voltage, average current is only, let's say, a matter of a resistance that allows to easily transform one of these two parameters into the other. Looking at the slide, you see that we have a circuit with a comparator that provides a logic signal in output, able to activate the silicon-controlled rectifier gate when the two inputs are equal. In particular, one of the inputs is a suitable voltage threshold, and the other one is the output of a circuit that reproduces the behavior of a silicon-controlled rectifier output when the load is resistive. In the slide you see also the diagram that shows the relationship of the average voltage with respect the delay, the value of tau, that is the time into which we turn up the SCR from the time into which the waveform crosses the zero axis, We see that the emulator is made of a operational amplifier with a reaction featuring a capacitor and a resistor, and more or less this circuit reproduces, let's say, the graph shown in the slide. But the core of the concept is the fact that we can say that the process, that is the heating of the food, is a slow process. And this allows us to claim that the process variable, the temperature, will be influenced by the current applied to the circuit, not instantaneously, but after a certain interval of time. That is, the compound can be considered an accumulator of energy, so as to modify its temperature after enough energy has been accumulated, and therefore when we talk about accumulator, we immediately think at an electronic component that represents this behavior, like a capacitor, and we know that the transfer function of a capacitor is an integral, that is an average. Therefore, we can say that the process more or less is sensible to the average of what it is given to it in input, and the approach is correct. And now the questions. The first question is related to the piezoelectric accelerometer and asks what is the transfer function and how to keep it stable if we see that it features some problems in terms of stability. And clearly the question is related to this point. If we consider the slide number 36 of the transducers block, we see that the piezoelectric accelerometer can be considered in terms of transfer function as a simplification of the moving mass model we developed, into which the product of the mass times the acceleration of the object into which the transducer is loaded is equal to the product of the mass times the relative acceleration that the internal object of the accelerometer has minus a elastic, let's say, force that in the moving mass accelerometer is given by a spring, and in this case in the piezoelectric accelerometer is given by the compression, let's say, of the moving mass exerted against the piezoelectric block. Therefore, the transfer function will be given by the ratio of the relative displacement internal to the accelerometer of the moving part divided by the real acceleration of the device, equal to minus m divided the elastic constant Kp, that multiplies 1 divided by 1 plus m divided by Kp times s square. In this case, in other words, the oscillating motion that will characterize the diagram in frequency is without damping, and in correspondence of the resonance frequency square root of Kp divided by m will have a gain that diverges to the infinite. This is clearly a situation, first of all, that brings the system immediately in a not stable and in a dangerous condition, and the second that cannot be managed at all by the control. So we cannot compensate, we cannot postpone this point in frequency at an interval into which the process will not work. Simply, we have to avoid this area. In other words, the numerical controller should take care that the process doesn't work at frequencies that are not only the resonance one, but close to the resonance one. This is the only control that we can exert, and therefore the answer is we cannot make stable the system. We simply try to exclude those frequencies at which the system is not stable at all. Second question asks why the input impedance of a circuit must be high and the output one must be low. In the question, clearly, we have in mind the situation, interesting for us, that puts a transducer in relationship with the following circuits that could be a conditioning network, a sample and hold unit, and surely the analog to digital converter. The issue is that the voltage provided by the transducer is a measurement of a magnitude, of a physical magnitude, as we well know. And clearly this measurement must be absolute. It cannot change depending on the particular electronic conditions of what follows the transducer, because otherwise the measurement couldn't be considered reliable, affordable. This is the case if the relationship between the impedances of the transducers and what follows is not correct. In other words, the output impedance of the transducer is the load, let's say, on which a suitable current passes, therefore determining the output voltage of the transducer itself. If we connect this point with another, let's say, device, we put in parallel the output impedance of the transducer with the input impedance of what follows. For example, let's imagine that is the ADC, the converter. In the parallel, I'm talking in terms of electronic circuit, we well know that the prevalent impedance is the lower one. Therefore, it is necessary that the output of the transducer features a lower impedance than the input impedance of the device that follows it. Because only in this case the voltage provided by the transducer will be fixed, whatever we attach to it. Otherwise, what can happen is that if the input impedance of the device that follows the transducer is lower than the output of the transducers we are considering, in the parallel, the winner will be the input impedance of what follows the transducer. And in this case, the current provided by the transducer will prefer this one, this impedance, because clearly the current goes where it finds less opposition to its passage. And this means that the voltage we read is determined by the product of the current by this impedance. So it can be considered different depending on what we are connecting, on what we are attaching to the transducer. And this is not acceptable, because it means that the transducer provides always the same current, that is the same output with respect to the physical magnitude it is measuring. But what we read is different depending on what we are attaching to the transducer itself. In other words, we could say as a philosophical claim that the truth depends on the person that considers it, that tries to provide an interpretation of it. Not acceptable in engineering, clearly. Therefore, the solution typically adopted is to insert between the transducer and what follows a operational amplifier in the so-called buffer amplification, buffer configuration. In this case, in fact, we don't change the value of the voltage provided by the transducer, but we insert a device featuring a theoretically ideally infinite input impedance and a theoretically null, zero, I mean, output impedance. And this will not influence at all the value of the voltage, therefore of the measurement that we are acquiring through this kind of transducer. The next question asks for the definition of the sensibility of a strain gauge, highlighting those parameters that are able to influence this term. So, first of all, the definition of sensibility is the variation of the electronic parameter with respect to the variation of the physical parameter that the transducer is measuring. In the case of the strain gauges, we provide a slightly different definition of sensibility because we have a percentual variation of the electronic magnitude with respect to the percentual variation of the physical magnitude that we are considering. Once more, the block of the slides related to the transducer can help us. In particular, at slide number 61, we have the definition of the so-called gauge factor, that is the relationship between the R on R divided by the L on L. In other words, the relative variation of the resistance with respect to the nominal value divided by the relative variation of the length divided by the length itself, electronic relative variation divided physical relative variation. This is the sensibility of the transducer. After several calculations that start from, you remember, a superposition of effects when considering the mechanical action on the device, shown again in the slide 61-62, delta R, that is the variation of the resistance, is seen as the effect of the variation of the length, of the variation of the resistivity, and of the variation of the section of the wire we are considering. And every time we analyze the variation of one of the parameters that define the resistance of the strain gauge while keeping constant the other ones. So we write rho divided by A delta L plus L divided by A delta rho minus rho L divided by A square times delta A. We made many considerations and we arrived in slide 63 to a definition of the gauge factor that is equal to 1 plus the rho on rho divided by the L on L plus alpha. Alpha was the relative variation of the section of the wire on which the strain gauge is based. And we demonstrated that is a value included between 0 and 1. So not a big, let's say, player in the gauge factor definition. Therefore, to, let's say, highlight, to augment the sensibility, the only term that can help us is the resistivity, the relative variation of rho with respect to the relative variation of L. And this is clearly related to the material that we are employing. And in particular, this conducted us to the conclusion that semiconductors are a good choice, because in this case the term, depending on the variation of the resistivity, is within 100 and 200, so providing a good sensibility of the transducer to the physical phenomenon that we are taking into account. And finally, let's consider the last question that is related to the role of the coupling diodes in electronic circuit. We are required to describe the usage in a contact matrix that we have seen in the lessons, and that is shown in particular in the slide 29 of the conditioning networks block. In this slide we have a couple of concepts. The first is related to the usage of a matrix of contacts, as shown in the figure, that allows us to considerably reduce the number of the pins of a port of a microprocessor involved into the acquisition of, let's say, a certain number of values. The specific example that we considered was related to the need for reading four binary coded decimal numbers, together with a couple of push buttons for every number. That is, theoretically, we should read six contacts per every number we are acquiring. And since in the particular example we made, we needed to acquire four numbers, globally we have to read 24 contacts. 24 contacts corresponds to 24 bits potentially of the port. Clearly this is not intelligent, because it means that a lot of the pins of the port are spent into a useless operation, and therefore we conceived such a solution into which the numbers are read on a step-by-step basis. At first the first number, then the second, then the third, and then the fourth one, through the usage of a decoder unit. And this reduced the number of the bits of the port really employed to six, with consistent sparing in terms of resources and the possibility of interfacing with other things. The second issue is more related to the question that is made to us, that is the role of the decoupling diodes in such a kind of situation. As we know, to decouple means to separate two electronic devices without altering the transfer function, that is the let's say communication of a voltage or of a current from the first point up to the second following point, but separating the impedances of the two, let's say, connected partners. And the diodes allow to do this. The example is shown in the second picture, in the figure that you are looking. We have two columns and two rows. The columns correspond to those wires that are connected to the input pins of the port, while the wires are connected to the ground, but this ground represents the moment into which that row is selected by the decoder. Therefore, when selected, the line is physically connected to the ground. Moreover, we remember that depending on the switches that define the codification of the BCD number, we can have switches that are closed or are open, depending on the logic we are implementing. And the particular example that we are looking at features that the first row is with the two switches closed that correspond to an information equal to 00 brought to the port of the microprocessor, and in the second case we have a switch that is closed and the other one that is open corresponding to an information 01 brought to the port of the microprocessor itself. The problem is in the first case, if we don't consider the presence of the diodes, we have 2-0, that is two columns connected to the ground when selected, and the two values equal to 0 are regularly read by the microprocessor itself through the port. In the second case, if I repeat, we don't consider the presence of the diodes, in the first case we have a closed switch, that is a direct connection between the row and the column, and in the second case we have a open switch, that is no connection between the column and the row. But since in this case the row is connected to the ground because it is selected, the direct connection of the row with the column will be reflected through the previous, let's say, connections also on the second column. I mean that since the column is directly connected to the row, that is to the ground, this column will be set to zero, but we remember that is connected to the previous row, not selected in this moment, but the connection is present, so that row will be set to the ground, and this row is connected directly to the second column that should be read as one, but since it is shortly connected to the ground, will be read as a zero. This situation doesn't apply in case we introduce the presence of the diodes, as you remember, because in the first case the two diodes basically feature their cathodes connected at ground, so the two columns can be regularly acquired as 2-0 values, but in the second case we cannot have that, let's say, transfer of the ground information through the rows, because the column of left is read regularly as 0, since the diode can be crossed by a current, since its cathode is connected to the ground, and the connection is established between the second row and the left column, that is set to 0. But this 0 is not, let's say, transferred to the first row, because in the first row the diode doesn't work. And it doesn't work because that row is not selected and is not connected to the ground, is floating. And when a diode features its cathode floating, that is connected theoretically to an infinite resistance, simply it's broken, it's off. Therefore, the first column, the left column, is set to zero, but this zero is not transferred to the first row, and I mean to the second column, the right column. Therefore, the value of that column will be only defined, determined by the presence of the diode in the connection with the second row, together with the switch that in this case is open. Therefore, no current crosses the diode, and therefore that column can be acquired regularly, corrected as one. This is possible only due to the presence of the diodes that decouple, that separate every row by its corresponding column, therefore avoiding that there is a ground loop in such a kind of network of contacts, determining a correct and not wrong acquisition of the values that are set through the switches.